Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 44 of Nerd Pride Radio. 44 BC, that was the year that Julius Caesar was stabbed to death on the Senate floor. Even you, Brutus? Oh, so ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. God, I'm stumbling over my nerds. Plus, there's about seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. Oh, our sponsor this week, Team Rocket. For the absolute best in devastation protection, always reach for the stars above. Team Rocket, denouncing the evils of truth and love in your community since 1997. And look inside this week's circular for our Team Rocket trouble coupons. Bring in your trouble coupons on Double Trouble Tuesday for twice the value. We're blasting off at the speed of light. Isn't that right, Meowth?
Meowth, that's right!
Oh, it's so good to be back on the air, guys. I love talking to you. I put out last week's podcast, had a great time doing it. It just felt good to get it out, and your guys' feedback was just spectacular. I've gotten some feedback on the forums, little notes from people, just basic stuff, and it makes me feel good. I've been kind of leery. I haven't yet posted out on Facebook that I'm back. I haven't done, all my usual pimping around to different websites, although I'm going to get to that. I just want to make sure I'm actually going to do this for a little bit before I start making a big deal out of it. Right now, I'm just having fun, and I appreciate you guys being right there with me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And ever since then, I cannot stop thinking about this podcast. I've been working all week, slapping new stuff together, writing down ideas, organizing, whatever. So right now, at least, my energy is high. I hope it stays this way, because this is awesome. But enough of that. Right now, it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. And then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first on the master list, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. Really, all I've got to talk about is Pathfinder. You know that. Tomorrow night, we're playing again. I'm recording this on a Wednesday night. We play on Thursdays on Roll20. And tomorrow night, we're going to play, and Eliahad is back. Eliahad has had a break for the last several weeks because he's out, earning money or something stupid that's not as important as Pathfinder. And he's going to be back, so that'll be cool. And last week, this isn't a full-fledged Mike was wrong, but I was a little absent-minded. And last week, I listed off all the people who are playing, and I'm not going to go through them again because last week, darn my phone, I should learn to turn that off before I start recording. Anyway, I went through all of the people playing last week, and I forgot Zen. I completely forgot Zen. I feel so bad. So, hi, Zen. Sorry about that. So I'm not going to list them again because I know I will forget somebody again, and I would hate to do that. But what I was going to talk about with Pathfinder, since I haven't played since the last recording, there's nothing new to add for story stuff, but I will note that this week Darks asked us on the forums, because we've got kind of a big group playing. I mean, grand total, I think there's like 12, 13, 14 people who have either promised to play or tried to play. And we regularly have about 7 or 8 every time we play, but there's actually like 10 of us in the group, 11. I don't even know. It's a lot. And so Darks asked us, he said he's got someone that he knows, works with, something, who's interested in joining our group, and he's asking the group if that's okay. And to my surprise, my initial response was, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And why does that surprise me? Because I have always stated for years, people ask me, what's the perfect group size? What's the perfect group size for a role-playing game? And I have always said that 3 or 4 players is my ideal. I love 3 or 4 players in a group because it gives me enough time to give face time to everybody without anyone having to feel left out or whatever. Not too many things to remember all at once. So as a game master, that's what I've always stated as my preferred size. And I would probably maintain that that is still true. 3 or 4 people is probably about right. Enough to mix things up and make it complex and rich, but not so many that it starts to get distracting to me with too many threads to follow or something like that. And I was applying that to Pathfinder, because I've played in games of up to 5 or 6 people. Once there was 7. And it's always worked out pretty well, but I've always liked a smaller group. So with Darks' group, with this Pathfinder group that we're playing, the Rune Lords group, I was initially really, really leery of having so many people around. And in fact, almost a little resentful that, hey, what we got here first. What are you guys doing jumping on the bandwagon now? No, it's too crowded. Stay out. It just really made me nervous. I thought, yeah, and it's not my game. I mean, it is in the fact that I'm playing in it and I love it. I would do anything to keep this thing going because I really enjoy it that much. But, you know, technically Darks is the one running the group. So it's his group and it's up to him who's going to come in, who's not. It's what he can handle. And as it turns out, he can handle a lot and handle it pretty well. So I'm really impressed. And what has happened, because he asked us if we would mind having someone else in, is I realized that no, you know what? As much as it made me nervous in the past, I'm not really that concerned because we've seen that, you know, if we have a group of 10 or 11 of us, yeah, there's going to be 2 or 3 people who can't make it on any given week. And so we just kind of pretend that you know, they're off recovering from their hangover or they're off on a side quest or they're off doing whatever that for whatever reason, they're just not with us today. No big deal. We work it out. Hold on. Sorry about that. I had to pause it right there. I had to get the guinea pigs out of the room. I don't know if you guys could hear them, but one of them was relentless with that bottle. Click, 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 click. Driving me batty. So if the last 2 minutes sound a little distracted, it's because I was. Anyway, where was I? I was talking about, group size. And so here I realized that I've been wrong all this time. I've just maintained it as this truth that because I'm more comfortable with 3, 4, maybe 5 people, I've just taken this somehow as this truth that larger groups are just too unwieldy, that there's just no good way to make that work, that it's not something I would ever be comfortable with. And it turns out I'm completely wrong about that. That when we're playing with a group of adults who all understand how the process works, even though, yeah, combat takes a little while because you've got, you know, 8 people to sit there and go through turn by turn, we all deal with it pretty well. And we're doing it online where we have this opportunity to do conversations back and forth with each other that sometimes we do them in private, sometimes we do them out in the open. And yet somehow those conversations aren't taking away from the flow of the action, that we're all kind of contributing, we're all paying attention to everybody else's moves, offering support or commentary as appropriate. I'm just surprised at how smoothly it all works, and I feel a little silly and a little childish for ever having felt so strongly for so long that this group size would never work. And the reason I bring it all up is because that, as I had that revelation about myself, combined with, I was just listening to past episodes of the podcast this week again, and I got to an area where, you know, in one podcast I had talked about, a stumbling block I was having gaming with my kids and especially with the one who was 9 at the time and what was I going to do to get him more involved or get him more excited about the game or make it work for him. And I came up with this whole list of ideas and then I came back the very next episode, the very next week and said, oh wow, I'm a complete idiot. No, none of that worked. And I was, and it struck me because when I stated the first one, I was so confident in my analysis. That was like, hey, you know what? This is it. This is how gaming works. This is how kids operate. This is exactly what I need to do. And I came back the next week and went, wow, was I totally wrong? And so this is just in the realm of gaming, but it reminds me that, it's a continuing lesson in how much I don't know. I mean, I think I'm really smart, you know, most of the time. And seemingly, especially, you know, I come talk to you guys, I post out on the internet, whatever. I seem to know lots of things about lots of things. And yet, little things like these continually cropping up to remind me that I really don't know crap about crap. And really, half the time, no matter how confident I sound about a topic as I'm going on about it, and I can sound pretty confident and authoritative as I talk, there's some pretty good chances that I'm actually just talking out my ass. So, you know, I don't know, a little lesson in humility for me. Not that it will make any difference, because I will continue to be a know-it-all and overbearing and all that, because that's what I do. But you guys will know that when I'm doing that, it's probably just to cover up my own insecurities. In the back of my head, you'll know that I'm still thinking about how, you know what, I might be wrong again. That happens all the time. I don't know if that was coherent, but I'm done with that one. Let's move on to the Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right. That music you just heard, that means if you don't walk away right now, you might be in danger of learning something. I actually have two Science Corners this week. I'll only play the music once. I'll spare you. I know you all love Shatner, but we've got to move on. The first one is Dr. Noah. He's not a real doctor, but he is a real Noah. That is my youngest son, Noah. I told you last week that he was working on putting out his own video series. He's got episode one completed. It's finally done in the can, and we're ready so that hopefully tonight I'll be posting that out on YouTube and I can provide some links to it or whatever. I don't think we'll allow any commentary on it because he is only seven and he doesn't need to be subjected to YouTube commentary. But hopefully we get that out tonight. We had a real struggle because we recorded it while we were at school. My wife was working on lesson plans, and so me and Noah worked together to make this video. And we were recording it on school laptops. So, it was their Macs he was using Photo Booth and iMovie to put it all together. And look, would Mac products and iMovie and all that, would that be what I chose to put together a video podcast? No, because I don't use Macs. But he does, and he's actually pretty good at the software. So, hey, it's his stuff. We'll let him do what he wants to do. And as it turns out, it came out really, really well. He wrote most of the script himself, obviously. You know, I offered him some creative suggestions as we went, and there's lots of things that had I been completely in charge of it, I certainly would have, added a lot of different flourishes and explained things differently, and, you know, but he's seven, and he's in charge, and that's what's so awesome about it. It's like a 5-minute video where he talks about elasticity, and I won't give it away. Obviously, you're all dying to see it. So anyway, it was just a really good time, and I hope he keeps doing it, because for a first effort, for a 7-year-old, oh, I am so impressed with this kid, having a great time with it. So that's Dr. Noah, and hopefully you'll see him soon. But that's not the other thing that I was looking at. In fact, just today this came up, is I was looking at carbon fiber. There was a video on how strong carbon fiber materials are, and technically these are carbon fiber reinforced polymers, that is, polymers that have the carbon fiber woven through it, built into it. Anyway, I don't understand the entire construction process. The science is beyond me at the moment. I haven't done enough research. But what I do know is, for this video, they've got the materials testing dude, the engineer who's going to show us how strong this carbon fiber component is. And so he's demonstrating to the interviewer. He says, all right, here's a normal drive shaft for, and I don't know if it was for a truck, car, or whatever, but he's got a steel drive shaft. And he hands it to the guy, and the thing's heavy. Heavy, you know, I mean, it weighs, you know, a good 50 pounds. It wasn't too hard to, it's not like he couldn't lift it, but it was obviously an effort. And then he hands him the identically sized, identically shaped carbon fiber drive shaft for the same vehicle, and says, all right, here, now try this one. And the thing's like 8 pounds. He's lifting it with one hand. You could just toss the thing around. It's already carbon fiber, amazingly light. And so they hook him up to the device that's going to, basically it's a torsion device. It's just going to twist the thing until it finally either bends, buckles, snaps, whatever it's going to do. And, the steel one they put in, and apparently at, I think, 1300 newton meters of torque, the thing finally started, I mean, it just bubbled up and just boom, twisted, and the whole thing deformed out of shape. Really impressive, just to watch it happen. And then they put in the carbon fiber drive shaft, and under the same stresses, yeah, it got to 1300, and it's not even a blip. Nothing. Thing went all the way up to like 4800 newton meters, so three and a half times the amount that the steel could take, with the exact same size and shape, but, you know, one-fifth the weight. It got all the way up to, like I say, 4800, and then finally the thing snaps. So carbon fiber, and this is, you know, it's not like we haven't been using carbon fiber for a long time already. I mean, they're putting it into, you know, vehicles especially, if you want really, really lightweight vehicles, airplanes, where weight is a huge issue. They put it in golf clubs and baseball bats. And in fact, the newest one, and the reason we were watching this video in the first place, is it's part of Walmart's new trucks. I don't know if you've seen Walmart's new trucks, but you should take a look, because they are just space age looking. All right, these huge streamlined front ends with this huge bubble looking cab, and it's all streamlined. And when you get inside it, the driver, instead of sitting in the traditional, you know, left side of the cab driver's position, the driver is mounted dead center on this thing. So he sits right in the center of this cockpit. So he's got windows all the way around him. So he's got high visibility. And then this beautiful control panel in front of him where he steers from here, but then he's got display screens on either side with customizable readouts so he can, you know, whatever stats of his vehicle that he's checking. This is awesome. And then the rest of the truck also redesigned. But they said one of the cool things about it is the whole side of the truck is a single carbon fiber piece, all right, or carbon fiber reinforced polymer. But anyway, the whole side of the truck, 53 feet long. It's the first time they've ever fashioned a single piece 53 feet long to make for the side of a truck. All right, so these are the new Walmart trucks, and they are really amazing looking. Oh, and this is not related to the carbon fiber, but the truck then also has an electric engine, electric motor. It's not even going to run on gas. And these are going to be Walmart's new trucks for hauling stuff around this country. And so they've built it electric. They've built it, redesigned the whole cab, the whole cockpit, redesigned everything for better performance, better drivability, better safety. And then used these carbon fiber polymers, these elements, to build the whole truck to make the whole thing lighter. So I'm just really excited to see how these things perform. I can't wait to see them on the road. I want to see how efficient they really are compared to traditional trucks. I should have done some more research on it, but I wasn't interested in the trucks because I got all caught up in the carbon fiber stuff. So the next thing from carbon fibers, because already we're talking, you know, one-fifth the weight and up to, you know, 3 to 5 times the strength for the same size of piece. So like even it's a good, you know, 20 times the strength of steel just by weight. But beyond that, beyond the carbon fibers, you then get the carbon nanotubes. All right, and this is the one that I know we've all heard of these, but I started looking at them again because I was wondering how strong are the carbon nanotubes? Because it would, I mean, and the real important part of carbon nanotubes, really, I mean, I'm sure they will revolutionize material science, and will, you know, once carbon nanotube structures or carbon nanotube polymers are widespread, it will revolutionize the way we do lots and lots of things. But none of that's important. What's important is carbon nanotubes will be what gets us our space elevator. And that's all I really care about. Because the whole idea here is with a space elevator, you basically put up a satellite in orbit, geosynchronous orbit over the equator, and then it has a cable that runs from the satellite to the ground. That's it. You got, well, multiple cables, obviously, because then you're going to have an elevator, literally an elevator that just runs up and down from the ground to space on an elevator, a cable, all right? And probably a carbon nanotube cable or something fashioned from that material. That's amazing to me. And we honestly have pretty much everything we need except a way to fabricate, 50-something miles or 100-something miles worth of cable. How far is it to geosynchronous orbit? Hold on. Let me get out Google. Let me see how high geosynchronous orbit is. This is what makes for the best podcast, by the way. You guys get to hear me type. Geosynchronous orbit. There it is. And a quick look says geosynchronous orbit says, geostationary orbit? Is that what I want? All right, let's try that one. Geostationary orbit says distance from Earth. Oh my God. Wow. No, that's way farther than I thought. 22,000 miles. That's a long way to run a cable. Potentially, do we run in a lower orbit? Can we run a space elevator to a lower orbit? I should look that up. I mean, because once you've got it tethered to the ground, can you hold it in place without the expenditure of massive energy? Now, how is it that I type in the letter S and it already knows I'm looking for space elevator? That is amazing to me. Space elevator, transportation system with a ribbon-like cable or tether anchored to the surface, and extending into space. And it says at 22,000 miles. So, all right. So there's our challenge, is we need 22,000 miles or 35,000 kilometers, however you want to do that. We need 22,000 miles of cable to run from Earth to geostationary orbit. And right now, the longest carbon nanotube that has ever been created, 18.5 centimeters. So we are probably only like 7 orders of magnitude away. So we are really, really close is what I'm saying. 7. 7's not much, right? All right. So anyway, this is where the stuff fascinates me. So I'm looking at carbon nanotubes and stuff made with carbon nanotubes. And if you could get a cable made of the carbon nanotube structures, its tensile strength is so great that the stat that it gave me was you got a cable of that that is 1 square millimeter in cross-sectional area. All right, so 1 square millimeter. We are talking a tiny, tiny cable of carbon nanotube stuff. All right, and you can get that cable. It could support, you could lift 7 tons. 7 tons. Are you serious? That is a lot. All right. So then I think, would that be an elephant? Because that would be a great way to demonstrate it. Is that one millimeter across, roughly. I mean, it's circular, so it's a little different. But anyway, 1 millimeter across, and this cable, I mean, we're talking like the diameter of a kite string. All right, maybe a little bit thicker. But a kite string that can pick up an elephant, that would be awesome. So I look it up, and yeah, that's roughly an elephant, but you know what's even better? It's also roughly a T-Rex. So we're talking about a string, just a narrow little string of this stuff could pick up a T-Rex with a proper harness, obviously, because you know you just loop the thing around its belly, you're going to cut your T-Rex in half, which would also be really cool, but probably cruel. So, and really a waste of a good T-Rex. If we had one, can you imagine a slip-up like that? Ah, the harness was wrong. We cut him in half with our carbon nanotubes. All right, I'm getting silly. Sorry about that. but that is what I've been looking at with carbon fibers. I just thought it was cool, cool stuff. And so, of course, I'm here to share it with you. But having done the science corner, the next thing on my master list, this is good. Roku! Oh, Roku, this is where I talk to you guys about the stuff that I'm watching streaming on my Roku box, which, by the way, previously has only included Netflix stuff, because Netflix streaming is a big part of what I watch in this house, and I love my Netflix streaming, but my Roku also will do Hulu Plus, which I don't have Hulu Plus yet, but it won't be very long. My Amazon Prime stuff, which Amazon Prime does not have enough exclusive content that I really care about. It's got a few TV shows, the British Downton Abbey. There's a couple of things that I'm not getting on Netflix that I could get on Amazon Prime, but just there's nothing exciting enough to really make me switch over to it. And then also, there's hundreds of channels you can get on your Roku box or your Chromecast or your whatever, if you've got an internet ready TV, there are lots of ways that you can get to these different channels. But, one of the other ones I've got is Crackle, which Crackle has an interesting mix of its movies and TV shows, And it's all free, and the only cost to you is that they play advertisements like watching regular TV. So every 15 minutes, you have to put up with one commercial, and then you're back to your show, which is not bad. It's a little awkward the way they run it, but I've always said, if the cost of watching something that I really want to watch is that I have to watch one commercial every few minutes, I can live with that. That's not, you know, that's what broadcast TV does. And if it brings down the costs, so I don't have to have individual subscriptions to everything in the world that I want to see, I'm happy to do that. So Crackle's doing that. They're trying to work out that model. So anyway, oh, and YouTube. I can get YouTube on my Roku box now. So we actually occasionally will watch YouTube on Roku. All right, and so that's where these two new TV shows have come from, is from my Roku box, one from YouTube and one from Crackle. And both of these you can just get on the internet, obviously. But I'm watching them on Roku because otherwise I wouldn't have a bit here, would I? And these are not, I say, new shows. These are not new shows. I think both of them, well, anyway, I'll get to that when I get there. But they've both got a couple seasons under their belt, at least. And the first one is Bravest Warriors. Have you seen Bravest Warriors yet? Because if not, you should go look. It's on YouTube, and it's from a group called Cartoon Hangover, and Cartoon Hangover has quite a bit of material, and some of it's cute, some of it's not, but none of it has really thrilled me the way Bravest Warriors has. Bravest Warriors, I will actually follow it, find out when the new episodes come out. I watch them as soon as I can, because I'm really excited about this show. The others, you know, hey, if I've got some time and I think about it, maybe I'll watch something, but Bravest Warriors is the one, created by, what's his name who does Adventure Time, has created Bravest Warriors, and it's the same sort of animation style. And the Bravest Warriors are four teenagers in space, and they are almost Power Rangers-style heroes. They're color-coded, and they each have an animal-themed item that, you know, and it's not even clear how the technology works or how it's really this broad Adventure Time-style fantasy, but set in space. And also created for adults, so that there are some jokes in it that are way too risque for Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, and yeah, most of it, I don't have any problem with my kids seeing it. It's not like it's, you know, but they do make some jokes that that are a little off color for Cartoon Network, or at least for daytime Cartoon Network. But you should check out Bravest Warriors. The thing has an overarching mythology that you just get hints of here and there. They haven't really tied everything together, but there's a couple of characters in there that you can see that there is something going on, and eventually we'll get to it. All right, and I'm excited. I love Bravest Warriors. I recommend it. You guys should go watch it. I think my absolute favorite character in the entire show, most people would say it's Catbug, because Catbug is played by a little kid, and he's adorable, and he really is totally cute. And the stuff that Catbug says is hysterical in context. It's just great. But no, it's Beth's horse. Beth's horse, and you'll know the episodes when you get to them. I love Beth's horse. Funniest character in the whole thing, and profound. Great stuff. So watch Bravest Warriors. It is worth your time. It really is. And I think Bravest Warriors, are they up to like season 2, episode like 7 or something like that? So, I mean, they've got like almost 20 episodes under their belt, plus a bunch of short things that they've put together for it. And it's just entertaining as all get out. The other one is on Crackle, and it is Jerry Seinfeld doing Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And maybe you've heard of it, maybe you've even seen an episode. He's up to like season 3 of this thing. He's been doing, you know, so he's got 25 episodes in there, 30 episodes, something like that. And for each episode of this show, Jerry goes out and he has a comedian who's going to be his guest for the day. And so he goes out and gets a car that is appropriate to the guest. And that can mean a lot of things. When he took Patton Oswalt out, he went and got himself a DeLorean. And, well, two DeLoreans, really. And when he took out, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. Oh, that was my favorite episode so far. He took out Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, so he got this very classic, stately-looking car from the 40s, maybe. It was beautiful. Anyway, so Jerry goes out and he gets a car appropriate to his guest. We spend just a minute or so at the beginning where he describes what car he's picked out and what's cool about it. And then he drives over to wherever he's picking up his comedian guest for the day. And, you know, calls him on the way over, and we get a little clip of that. And then he picks them up, and he takes them out for coffee, or takes them out for somewhere to eat, or whatever. But usually they're getting coffee. And then they just talk. And then maybe they'll drive somewhere else and check out a different place, and they'll hang out for a while, and then eventually he'll take them home. And so it is comedians in cars getting coffee. It's Jerry Seinfeld just talking to somebody he wants to talk to. And they literally spend an entire day together most of the time. I mean, I've seen some of them where if you're just judging by the light outside, that they probably spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours together. Some of them, like with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, he must have spent the entire day with the two of them because he went through 2 full meals with those guys. And so he must have had 8 or 10 hours, and he films everything. All right. And then out of a 4, 5, 10 hour day, however much footage they've got, he condenses it down to an episode that is 15 minutes long. The absolute best 15 minutes out of a 5 hour day spent with some comedian that he just enjoys hanging out with. It's fascinating. Really, really fascinating. I like this. There's been, I've seen maybe 9 or 10 of them so far, and there's been only one that I really just went, I got to the end and I went, eh. It was Todd Barry, who I like. Todd Barry, he's good, but he's kind of mellow, kind of low key, and it just didn't translate to anything exciting in this format, which is too bad. But all the rest of them I've seen: Louis C.K., Patton Oswalt, Mel Brooks, and Carl Reiner again. Awesome. Tina Fey. I can't even remember who else he's had in the car with him, and it's just really, really good stuff. Just kind of insightful, kind of a. Yeah, there's nothing really too deep or profound. It's just an interesting look at comedians relaxing and how they relate to each other and stuff that they talk about. And again, we're only getting, you know, what Jerry wants to show us out of the whole day's worth. But I find that stuff fascinating. I love behind the scenes show business kind of stuff, especially in the realm of comedy. And I just think it's a great show. And again, you can check it out online. You can go to comediansincarsgettingcoffee.com. I mean, just do a Google search for it. You can go to the website and you can watch them all in HD right there on his website. Or if you have a Roku or other similar streaming net device for your TV, then you can go to Crackle. And you can watch it on Crackle and support them. So I've watched both ways, and I just really enjoy the show. So join me, would you? All right. See, I almost did it. I almost did it again. I was going to give it that long pause as I went to look to see what's up next. But, oh, you know what is up next? Oh, this is great. How much time? Where are we for time? Oh, look at that. Yeah, we're only a half hour into this. This is not bad at all. Because we're already at the breaking point, which means we're going to get more Podomatic later. Shh. All right. We're at the breaking point, which means it's time for the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. Oh, this is great. I just watched this movie last night. I stayed up way too late because I just couldn't turn it off. I feel a little foolish for staying up so late, but it was worth it. The quote is, should I tell you where it's from first? No, I won't. You'll recognize it. All right. Quote, "Don't take this lightly, boy. It wasn't all by your numbers. The fool nearly derailed the invocation with his insolence. Your figures are murky. You do well to heed my..." Wait, I'm still on speakerphone, aren't I? Okay, that end quote. God, I always forget to do that. That is the character of Mordecai, played by Tim DeZarn. I think Tim DeZarn. I have a question mark after it because I was too lazy to go back and look. From the movie Cabin in the Woods by Joss Whedon. Brilliantly fun. I've watched it 4 or 5 times, and it was on last night, and I just couldn't stop watching it. And I don't know if that quote is necessarily badass, but it is one of my favorite quotes in the movie. That one, and also after the first victim, Jules, the first victim is killed in the movie, the two guys who are sitting at the desk, the two, basically the guys in charge of the whole ritual process. By the way, did I say spoilers? Spoilers. If you haven't seen Cabin in the Woods yet, shame on you. Whatever. All right. Anyway, the two guys behind the desk, it's Hadley and Sitterson are their names. And after the first victim goes and they pull the lever and the thing gets smashed and the blood drains down and the ritual is underway, And then they stop and they actually say, you know, they've been joking around and doing stuff and, you know, they're just guys doing their business and they're acting like guys and things, you know, whatever. And now suddenly we've actually hit the first marker and the blood is spilled and they sit down and they say a prayer. And he's got this little medallion there and they say a little prayer and they end together on it and he kisses the medallion. That was the quote I was gonna do, but I couldn't find that one right away. And as I was looking for it, I came across Mordecai. So I did his. But both of those, that prayer scene in the midst of everything else that goes on with them, that prayer scene, and then the way Mordecai, the harbinger, as they refer to him in the movie, the way the harbinger is actually, you know, this is all staged. It's all set up so that they can get the ritual going. But the harbinger believes what he's doing. He's out there to offer a warning to these kids before they go traipsing off to their cabin in the woods. And, you know, he's a modern dude with, you know, modern problems, and he relates to them, you know, I'm still on speakerphone. Oh, God, that's so rude. Okay, that's all normal stuff. But the role of harbinger is still really serious. When they say their little prayer, that's because this is deadly serious. They are truly about a world-saving ritual here. And that, to me, as I watched last night, those were the moments that were so telling for me in this movie, that really powerful to realize, you know, especially if you're watching it knowing the end already, watching it realizing that, yeah, okay, these are guys at work and goofing around on the job and doing their usual stuff, but it's still a deadly serious business, and they're not kidding around about it. And everybody involved, no matter how much they might make some jokes, and there's a little gallows humor here and there, all of them realize how deadly serious this is, and none of them takes it lightly. And I just found that really, really powerful. Interesting for me, as I'm looking for the quote of that prayer, because I wanted to get the wording exactly right, I only vaguely remember, and I know that they ended on "as it ever was." But I was looking for the quote, and as I was looking for it, I found a website that was commenting on the movie, and specifically commenting on that it highlighted that prayer. It didn't give the words of it, but mentioned the significance of that. And it was in such a context that I thought, oh, wow, is this some religious zealot who has watched Cabin in the Woods and thinks it's really a blueprint for Satanism? Oh, man, this would be funny. So I'll go to their website, and I'm not going to give you the website because I don't need to don't need to support people like this. But I went to the website to see who it was and what they were actually really all about. And it turns out, no, it wasn't a religious zealot. It was a conspiracy nut, an Illuminati theorist. And truly, this person, because they must have seen Cabin in the Woods, and they gave a perfect analysis of the movie. They really did. This person obviously watched the entire thing, understood the movie, talked about its significance as a meta-commentary on horror movies and as a meta-commentary on some aspects of society. And it was a very deep analysis. The person was really smart and had everything put together and well-organized. But then the point that they make is that, aha, see, Joss Whedon has given us a glimpse into what really goes on at higher levels. And not claiming that, you know, they're really summoning elder gods, but that these sorts of rituals for the Illuminati are the kinds of things that they actually do in real life. That you'll notice that, yes, sure, some serial killers, some mass killers are just random crazy people. Yeah, that happens. But a lot of them, maybe most of them, are actually staged by the Illuminati. That's right. And you can tell because they all have these same kind of signs and symbolism worked into it, that they perform their mass killings in a specific way, a certain ritual, if you will, just like in the movie, where it's not enough that we sacrifice these people to the elder gods to appease them, but we have to sacrifice them in a particular way, with a particular method. And this guy was so deadly serious about it. And I was like, wow, really? I mean, not that it surprises me that there's people out here who believe this stuff, but it's just always fascinating to get a glimpse into that kind of mind when you see it. But enough of that. That's the badass movie quote of the week. And once we're done with that, you know what's next, right? That's right. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Well, where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, then send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. You'll notice I went a little bit long on the pod part of the Pod-O-Matic there, because I was listening to, I told you I've been listening to old episodes, and I was listening to one of them with my 16-year-old, and it was a short one. It was a Pod-O-Matic. And as soon as I got done, that part finishes playing, my kid looks at me and goes, oh, dude, lame. Lame. Where was the energy? So that was for you, kid. And also, before I get to R2's number here, which he has so graciously provided me, I should point out that I am down to less than 150 items on the Pod-O-Matic list, which is not crucial. Clearly, I could go 2, 3, 4, 5 more shows, maybe, with the material I have. But as we've noticed last week, some of these are a bit dated. I mean, even just a year or two old means they're getting kind of dated, or the references aren't nearly as fresh as they used to be. So, if you are interested and you would like to send me some more Pod-O-Matic entries, I would absolutely love to see them. But don't feel obligated. Look, I took almost a year off here. I have not been good about providing you the content, so don't feel obligated that you have to give me anything at this point. If I can keep cranking these out, if I can get through another 2, 3, 4 episodes, get them out on every week, every other week, if I can be good about it, okay, then you owe me. Then you owe me some Pod-O-Matic entries. But for right now, I'm just saying, if you feel like it, if you've got time, if something strikes you, send it along. If not, we'll survive for a while. We're good. But the first number, 69, dude. And that is from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul says, what was your favorite toy from the 80s? That's a good question, Paul. Having just seen the Lego movie a week or so ago, I would want to say Legos. Legos were always my favorite toy growing up. That's probably the best answer. Because I loved, especially the castle ones. Oh, I had lots of the castle. And these were the classic castle Legos, where the walls were all made out of yellow brick because they hadn't yet gotten to where they were customizing colors to match the item they were doing. It was like, oh, we have to build a castle. What's the closest thing we got? Let's go yellow. All right, that'll work. So I had giant yellow castles and knights on horses with all their paraphernalia, and they were awesome. Yeah, you know what? That was definitely my favorite toys from the 80s, was the Legos. Because I was going to say, and it seems cliche, I was going to say Rubik's Cube, because I really did love the Rubik's Cube. But you know, that did not have the lasting entertainment time that Legos did. I always went back to my Legos. Always. I loved them. Number 60. From Zimney. All right. Zimney Pod asks, what is the last song that you listened to? Wow. What an amazing question. The last song I listened to was, let's see, yesterday I put on iTunes and I listened to... Okay, I don't know which song was the last one I listened to, but I do know what playlist I was listening to. I was listening to Real Big Fish. I am going to go see Real Big Fish in concert coming up next month, and I'm so excited because Real Big Fish is, they're just fun. They're just fun, and I hope their performances are as fun as the energy that they have in their music any other time. I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be my birthday present, so me and my wife are going together. It's going to be awesome. I went out, and there are websites that will tell you what set lists these guys have played, any band. You put in the band and you ask what's been their playlist from their last how many concerts, all right? What's their, from the last month of concerts or the last year of concerts, what's been their typical set list? And so therefore I go and I find out what the most common songs are, and so I've built up a list, and I actually owned most of them. And then there were like 2 or 3 of them that I wasn't familiar with, and so I went out and listened to those, and a couple of them I picked up, a couple of them I didn't. But anyway, I've built myself a Real Big Fish set list that includes all the most common songs from their last 6 months of performing. And therefore, And most of, like I say, most of them I already own, I already know, but the ones that I don't, I'm like, I enjoy the songs more if I've heard them before, if I'm familiar with the music when I get there. Every now and then, you get surprised by a new song or whatever, but I'm just going to enjoy the show more if I'm already familiar with a lot of the songs. It gives me something to sing along to anticipate, to be excited about. And so that's what I was listening to. It was something from Real Big Fish. And I can't even begin to guess which one because I listened to them. That's 40 songs, so it was a good couple hours worth of playlist. So very, very cool. But good question, Zim. 99. Also from Zimney. Zimney Pot says, could you please share a story from a gaming convention? Well, I've only been to one gaming convention, and that is Gen Con. And I've been two different times, once with my brother and my mom, and once with my oldest son. And I'm going next year, I think, with my second son. So it'll be his turn. And that'll be exciting. But can I share a story from a gaming convention? Man, I should roll these up ahead of time so I have time to think about them. But, let me see if I can get a good one. It's got to be a story about the costumes. It really does. Both times, love looking at the cosplayers there. Anyone who's dressed up, I love that people do that. It is wonderful. One of my favorite parts of going to Gen Con both times. And when my brother and I went with my mom, we were a little shy about it. There were a couple people we got pictures with. Fat Sand Person was one of the ones we got a picture with. We loved Fat Sand Person. He was great. And then when I went with my son, we had made a decision ahead of time that anyone who was in a costume that we even vaguely liked, we would stop and get a picture with them because, hey, they're there in costume. This is what happens. And as it turns out, pretty well universally, everyone in costume there is thrilled to pose for pictures with people. And some of them would get way into character. The nurse from Silent Hill, the Jack Sparrow that we saw, were completely in character. Never broke character once while we saw them. They were great. And it turns out that most of them, that's why they're there in costume. They want to show off. They want to be appreciated. They're glad that somebody's, talking to them. And I guess there was once, maybe twice, that someone, they were probably in kind of a hurry. And so they seemed a little bit short, but they stopped and took a picture, and they were friendly, but you could tell that they were anxious to move on because they had somewhere to be. Which is fine. You know what? If someone doesn't have time for a picture, just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry. That's great. But they were all very gracious about it and very sweet. And almost all the pictures we got were my son posing with whoever it was that we found. Because I was holding the camera, so I would get a picture of him with whoever it was. Except when we ran across Dude Lilu. And Lilu from Fifth Element, there was some dude dressed up as Lilu. And he was really good. And he was doing the orange and white outfit, not the adhesive bandages outfit. And it was a great costume, really authentic. And I think we saw the same guy twice. Either there were two Dude Lilus, or this guy wore a beard the first day and then shaved it off for the second day. So maybe there were two of them, but I think he shaved. Well, we saw him on the second day after he had shaved. And so we stopped, and so here's, all of these pictures with my son, with all the different costumes that we saw, and the picture that I got with me, Dude Lilu. I was so thrilled about it. And I did not even realize at the time that he was doing it, he held up his Gen Con badge, and he was holding up his Gen Con badge for the camera, and he was pointing at it as he said, multi-pass. Oh, so cool. And it didn't register with me that that's what he was doing. Oh, by the way, you guys can't see me. I'm still wearing my badge from work, and I'm holding it up and gesturing to it so that you'll get the full effect here. Does that make it clearer for you? That's awesome. And it wasn't until after he walked away that I realized how funny multipass was, and I wish I had shown him some appreciation and love for that joke because it was really worthwhile. But he had already moved on. And so I felt like, I felt a little bit awkward because it was kind of like he put the joke out there and then it was kind of left hanging that he didn't get like a laugh or appreciation for it. And I felt bad. So, Dude Lilu, if you happen to listen to this podcast, if you're among my 12 listeners, I am so sorry because I thought it was hysterical. I was a little starstruck by your presence and I didn't quite express myself. It took me a little while to catch on. You know how it gets when you're in the presence of greatness, right? 43. Zimney dominates. Zimny asks, why is it that people say they slept like a baby when babies wake up like every 2 hours? That is an excellent, excellent question. I believe the idea is that when babies go to sleep, they have no worries. They don't worry about jobs. They don't worry about family. They don't worry about, there's nothing that keeps a baby awake at night other than, he's sick, he's fussy, he's hungry, that's a baby's worries. Those are the things that would keep a baby awake. But as long as that baby has been well fed and changed, then, you know, the baby will sleep right away. And they do wake up every 2 hours, but they sleep like 17 hours a day. That is a lot of sleep. That's something a lot of people would be jealous of. So I'm guessing that's why people say that. But I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the podcast before. But you know what's horrible about babies? And speaking of babies sleeping, one of the most horrible things about having a baby, and this happened to me with all four kids, is that they do wake up every 2 hours, every 3 hours. Forever. And that's fine. That's what babies do. And you get used to not sleeping and you become kind of a zombie. And then eventually they've been waking up every 3 or 4 hours for how long? And eventually they sleep through the night. You lay them down and then you wake up when the alarm clock goes off at 7 in the morning and you wake up and you realize, oh my God, the baby never woke up. And immediately, guaranteed, first thought, oh my God, the baby's dead. The baby's dead, and you have to panic, and you have to run in there, and you don't, you know, in case they're not dead and they're just sleeping, you certainly don't want to wake them up and disturb them because, oh, how nice that they slept so long. So you have to go in there and very quietly check it. Okay, yeah, they're still breathing. Yeah, I can hear them. Okay, we're good. And then you sneak back out and hope they don't wake up because, oh, look at that. How peaceful was that? But I swear, every single one of those kids, the first time they sleep all the way through the night, because I've had some people who say, oh yeah, they bring their baby home and the baby sleeps 6, 7, 8 hours every night without any problem. I've never had that baby. Every kid we ever had woke up initially every 2 or 3 hours and then it would slowly space out and you'd be used to waking up that, you know, you put the baby down, you wake up once or twice in the middle of the night to feed them or change them. All right. And then your day starts off with you being a zombie. And so that first time that they let you sleep all the way through, panic. When you wake up before the baby does, panic. Oh, I hate it. It's the worst feeling. One of the worst feelings ever. Number 24 from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul, ever cheated a choose your own adventure? Well, I suppose. I would guess that I have. I would guess that there have been times I was reading a choose-your-own-adventure for the first time or second time, and I would get to a decision, and I'd say, okay, yeah, I want to do this. And I'd turn, and I could see immediately when I got to the page that, oh, you're dead. Oh, wait, no. I meant I would do that other thing. All right, and I would go through it. But I don't even know if it counts as cheating with a choose-your-own-adventure because I don't know about you. But every Choose Your Own Adventure book that I had, I read through until I got to every ending. So, I mean, I would eventually explore every possible outcome of that book. And that, I don't know. It's a completist thing. Maybe every kid doesn't do that. I don't know. So I don't know if it's really cheating. But yeah, I am positive that I did that. Maybe it's a false memory, but I am positive there were times that the first time through the book, I would get to a crappy ending and then just back up a little bit. But I don't know if that's cheating. I don't remember if there was, in my mind, was there ever any notion that I want a really, really good outcome for the first time I read it? I mean, I would think that maybe that's a thing, that, you know, the first time you go through, you want to get to the best outcome or one of the better outcomes on your first read, because that would show that you made really, really good choices. But yes, the short answer is yes, I've cheated at Choose Your Own Adventure books. Number 85. This one comes from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, do you ever miss the Animal Cast? I've mentioned it a bunch of times. The Animal Cast was the podcast I did with my brother before I opened Nerd Pride. We had a website called animalball.com, which is no longer operational. And for a while, we opened it as a place to write games and publish games and stuff like that. And after a while, we started our own podcast, and we maintained that podcast for like 3 years. We got up through 115 episodes. And I still maintain, as I've said before, still maintain that that was just the funniest podcast I have ever listened to was the one I made with my brother. Because it was just an excuse for us to, we'd pick up the phone and call each other and we'd record it, and whatever we came up with was what went on the show. And we put some planning in. I mean, we had topics and themes, and I would say every maybe 10th episode we'd go in with a no prep episode where we'd come in just kind of blank. In fact, sometimes very intentionally blank, that we made a rule that for a no prep episode, you're not allowed to talk about anything on the podcast that you've thought about before the podcast. And it made for some really interesting conversations. We had a great time recording it. We had a great time listening to it. People seemed to like it. And then it's kind of petered out. It just, you know, we either ran out of time, or I still think we did quality material right up to the very end, but for some reason we both just got to the point where we just weren't motivated to keep going. I mean, we could still do great stuff with it, but it wasn't thrilling or exciting like it used to be. And for a while we got a second wind where for about 5 or 6 episodes right towards the end, I forgot we did this. What a great theme. We came out every week, we would do a new podcast and we would pretend to be a completely different podcast. We would just pick some new theme. So, 1 week we came out as a Harry Potter fan podcast. And so we spent the entire episode discussing Harry Potter. We had Harry Potter themed lists and Harry Potter themed discussions. And we acted as if, you know, here we are on episode 108 or whatever it was. And we acted as if we had always been a Harry Potter podcast. And we made references to, oh, well, way back in episode 60 when we talked about, and just completely bullshitted all the way through it. It was really funny and really fun. And so, we did a few of those. The only other one I can remember off the top of my head was, we did the Cobra Kai podcast, where we came out as two guys who were members of the Cobra Kai dojo from The Karate Kid. And so we were all about our karate and all about our workouts. And the whole idea was, we're the villains, we're the bad guys. And we don't realize that we're the bad guys. And so every list we did, everything we talked about was always from the point of view of how disappointed we are that the heroes seem to lose in so many movies, that the good guys just don't seem to get what they deserve by the time it's over, that, you know, it was just hysterical. And again, I'm not doing it justice here, but we had a great time with that show. And yeah, I miss it. There was there was a magic to it, but it's not something I don't think we could go back to. It was a very different time, different style, and we've just kind of moved on from it. But yeah, it was great while it lasted. Really, really enjoyed that. 46. Speaking of my brother, it's from Brasky. Brasky says, did you know that Fred Hicks is on Google Plus and he posts a lot if you follow him? Does this affect your decision not to have a Google Plus account? Well, speaking of dated references, right after, you had a conversation with me 2 years ago talking about Google Plus and talking about specifically some of the science guys you followed, and you made a suggestion to me that maybe it would be in my interest to check it out, and it would give me some material for this podcast. And so I got a Google Plus account and I tried it, and I realized after a couple of weeks that I liked it even less than I like Facebook. So therefore I just stopped doing it. So, Google Plus it's turned out to be a failure in general anyway, but even at the time, it just wasn't for me. Double aught. 00, number 100 from Sirius Paul. If you could have one magical rod from D&D, which would it be? Are you coming on to me? And it's amazing how often that response works to these questions. One magical rod. I don't even know what rods are available. Okay. But I do know which one I would take, because I know it is listed under rods, the immovable rod. And I'm sure there's other great ones out there, but this is the one that has always most fascinated me. It may not be the most powerful, but you get an immovable rod and you basically hang it in place. You place it in the air and then it stays there until you grab it and you say the command word or flip the switch or whatever it is you do with it. it will stay exactly in that position. It will hover there in that exact spot in the air until you give the command to move it. And the magic of the immovable rod is that if you have a pair of them, or even more than a pair, you can make yourself a little impromptu ladder. That you take one immovable rod, and you float it in the air, and then you step up on it, and you place another one up higher, and then you use them to climb that way. That, you know, if you move up far enough, you can grab the one. Yeah, you'd need three of them, I think, to make a good ladder. But if you have a set of immovable rods, okay, you move up enough, you can reach down, grab the one from underneath, turn it up, place it up higher. Keep going. I've always been fascinated by the immovable rod as a magic item and would have loved to have had it in, and I've never, as a player, obviously I don't play often enough, never had it as a player, and I have never used it as a game master. I've never granted it to my players. No matter how much I liked it and would have wanted to put it in the game, never did get around to it. But that one was my favorite. Number 18. Serious Paul again. Who would win between cavemen and astronauts? The cavemen have fire, but the astronauts do not have future weapons. Ah. Okay, well, okay. Do the cavemen have primitive weapons? Because I would assume that if we ran across cavemen and astronauts together, I mean, let's say the astronauts don't have futuristic weaponry, but they do have their spacesuits or their whatever. I mean, they've got their astronaut gear. That's how you know they're astronauts. Whereas the cavemen would have whatever their caveman gear is, which is probably, like a stone knife or primitive tools of some sort, and fire. He's allowed us fire. This is a toss-up. Cavemen in general were, I think, the advantages to a caveman is that they lead a more brutal life as it is. That they are, I assume that we've got cavemen who are hunters, as opposed to gatherers, or hunters and gatherers, maybe. But I don't think the cavemen would have as many reservations about violence. That's the big thing. Because the astronauts are modern civilized as much as we get human beings. And therefore, they would have some reservations about harming and killing others. They may not throw themselves into the fray quite as enthusiastically as the cavemen would. So the cavemen have that. On the astronauts' side, astronauts are required to be pretty physically fit. So these are not out-of-shape dudes. All right, these are guys who are in good physical condition. They are probably, already older than the caveman's average life expectancy, so they have more life experience. And because I'm not going to say that the astronauts are smarter than the cavemen, because we're all one species, so you can't say that they're inherently any smarter than cavemen. But the astronauts would have more knowledge, more a varied life experience, more. No, you know what? This is all moot. On a fairly level playing field, assuming that, the astronauts don't have any specialized future weaponry, anything like that, that both sides have access to the same kind of stuff, the astronauts are going to win. Yeah, if it comes down to a physical fight, the astronauts are going to win simply because they have the weight advantage. Astronauts are going to be, on average, like 6 inches taller and probably 50 or 60 pounds heavier, if not more than that. The extra reach, height, weight advantage, just modern nutrition. Give it up for the astronauts. They're going to take this. Number 36. Ooh, it's from Billy Bob again. Billy Bob says, okay, dated reference, how much are you looking forward to the Ender's Game movie? Are you looking forward to the day when you're, okay, these are two separate questions. All right, well, let's read all the way through. How much are you looking forward to the Ender's Game movie? Are you looking forward to the day when your blogging prowess will be all that's required for you to take over the world? Yeah, to answer the second question first, yeah, he missed the mark on that one, didn't he? The whole idea that being really persuasive on the internet would somehow lend itself to real-world influence. Yeah, that is not how the internet works. But, hey, good on him for at least predicting the the forum-like nature of the exchange of ideas that the internet would become, among, you know, also a delivery for porn and all of this other stuff. But as for looking forward to the Ender's Game movie, I was, to a degree, looking forward to the Ender's Game movie. I mean, kind of looking forward to it, but as it turns out, there was the controversy over his homophobic, anti-gay statements, and should we really be supporting a movie like that, and I didn't know where I fell on that exactly, but as it turns out, the reviews for it said, it's a good action movie, it's not adding anything to the book, it's not, so I haven't seen any particular reason why I'd want to go see it, but now, in retrospect, I still, I haven't seen the movie at all, but I actually feel kind of weird over the whole debate, because, you know, again, the idea that he is so virulently homophobic and that I wouldn't want to support a guy like that, and every viewing of this movie is going to put money in his pocket in some way, shape, or form. But on the other hand, I read the book long before I knew anything about his political views, and I love the book, and I still think the book is an absolute classic. And despite the fact that the guy is an ass, a wrong-headed ass, I think the book is important. I think the book is something that I would want my kids to read simply because it's a good book. It's a good science fiction novel, and it has points to make. And yet, you know, reading the book supports this dude and gives him money. It's, you know, it's hard to know how to feel about it. And part of me wants to compare it to, like, the stuff that's just come out recently about Woody Allen, or come out again about Woody Allen. I have, for many, many years, I've been protesting Woody Allen. I refuse to see anything that the man has done because, in my mind, the man is a creepy pedophile and doesn't deserve the accolades that he gets and doesn't deserve my attention, my patronage, my money. And people have, for all these years, they've simply excused his behavior. Oh, well, you know, Sun Yi isn't really his daughter. He never adopted her. That's all that stuff with Dylan and Mia Farrow. And it's because she's crazy. She, you know, she planted ideas in this kid's head. You say all of that you want. But first off, with Sun Yi, I mean, honestly, if he wasn't Woody Allen, if he wasn't a brilliant filmmaker, if he was just your next door neighbor who has been living with this woman, married to this woman, but with this woman for years, and her adopted daughter, who has grown up in his house, is not his own daughter, but has grown up in this house with him, near him, and suddenly she turns 18, and as soon as she's 18, he announces he's leaving his wife and marrying the girl. You wouldn't find that despicable? Of course you would. Again, leave aside the fact that it's Woody Allen. Technically she's not his daughter. Yeah, whatever. That's just excuses. Look, the fact that, and nothing happened until she was 18. Oh, really? Really? So there was no romantic entanglement. There was no inappropriate emotional attachment. There was no, they were more than likely having sex well before she was legal, but that's beside the point, even without that aspect. This is creepy as all get out, all right? And just for that fact alone, the guy doesn't deserve my money and my patronage. But now, you know, as these accusations from Mia Farrow's other adopted daughter, one of her adopted daughters, Dylan, was she adopted? I think so. I think they were all adopted. Anyway, Dylan comes forward with these accusations again from when she was 7 years old. And look, I don't know if you know anything about how the mind works. Is it possible that when she was 7, her mom implanted these memories, that her mom berated her and convinced her that these implanted memories were real, and then now somehow 20 years later she's still maintaining the exact same thing, that this hasn't fallen apart under scrutiny, that all of this is somehow lies? I mean, what does she have to gain by all of this? This is she could gain a book deal and there could be money made in it. So let's not discount that. But no, come on. Seriously, this is not, I'm inclined to believe her. And if it's going to be a matter of he said, she said, are you going to side with the girl who at 7 years old claimed that her stepfather molested her? Or are you going to side with the guy who already has a creepy history of an attraction to young girls who somehow claims it's all made up? Which one are you going to side with? And if it turns out we'll never know one way or the other for sure. I mean, there's never going to be definitive proof, but let's say definitive proof came out. I'm quoting some blogger at this point, who said, you know, if definitive proof came out, which side would you rather be wrong on? Would you rather side with the 7-year-old and then find out that, wow, Woody was innocent all this time? I feel so bad about that. All right. Or would you rather side with Woody Allen? All right. Against a girl who claimed to be molested. Would you rather side with Woody Allen and then when the definitive proof comes out, find out that, we were so wrong. Sorry that we traumatized you and denied the truth of your claims all these years. That was really horrible of us. Feel bad. Which, you know, to me, this is a no-brainer. But, and again, innocent until proven guilty, blah, blah, blah. You can say all that you want. For me, there is enough evidence out there to say that Woody Allen is a creep that I'm not going to give him my money. That's really what it boils down to. All right, I've gone way far afield. I got passionate about that. Sorry about that. But my point was, do you put Orson Scott Card and Ender's Game, do you put them in the same camp as Woody Allen? You put that, I mean, when you talk about Mike Tyson as a convicted rapist, you know, when you talk about Woody Allen as a potential probable child molester, a pedophile, when you talk about those and you say you don't want to give money to people like that, is that at the same level as someone who has spouted beliefs that I find really grotesque? I mean, and let's not, you know, this is not a small thing necessarily. I mean, Card has spoken out against homosexuality, and he has put money towards promoting his ideas and his beliefs. And there are people who are harmed by promotion of that sort of idea. So, but to me, is it the same sort of thing? Is there a balance to be weighed in the art? And I don't know. Most of me is leaning on the side of, God, I shouldn't be giving this dude any money. He's really homophobic and he's really wrong and he's not a nice guy in any way. And I really shouldn't be giving him any money. So, which I have so much trouble reconciling that with, but the book is actually really important. Can we just wait till he's dead? Can he like die in the next 5-10 years so I don't have to feel bad about giving the book to my next set of kids when they get old enough? Would that work out? That would be much more convenient for me. I rambled on way too long about that one. I'm over time. So guess what? It's time for GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. Both of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write us a nice review. Or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page, click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your day. You could do that for me. Don't forget to check out our free games page, available. I stumbled over that one too. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available at my free games page. I've got Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time, and all pretty great, actually. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to contact me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together, and we will have fun. I'm not going to do that. Number 5. This one's from Brasky. Hey, all right. And Brasky, good way to end. Brasky has an F. Mary kill. In the traditional F. Mary kill, I am given 3 options, and I have to choose one of those options to F, one of them that I will have sex with. One of these options that I will marry and remain with for the rest of my life, so no option of divorce, and one that I simply kill. Okay. My 3 choices in this case are a clone of myself at my current age. Number 2, a long-lost identical twin of myself. Or 3, a robot with a butthole made out of razor blades. All right. Okay, this is easy. I'm going to kill the robot. I'm sorry, but I'm killing the robot. There is no purpose in this world for a robot whose butthole is made out of razor blades. So that one's done. So really, now the choice is, who do I have sex with and who do I marry? This one's easy for me because I will, marry my long lost identical twin because there's nothing about marriage that says that I have to have sex with this person. So we don't have to involve incest in this. It's no big deal. We get married, and I'm sure, as my long-lost identical twin, he and I will have a lot in common. We would probably have a really good time living together forever. I'm good with that one. And then that means that I have to have sex with the clone of myself, which is not technically incest at all. I think if I have sex with a clone of myself, it's just masturbation. And there's nothing wrong with that, right?